Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out on a reporting assignment today. Here's the bold headline in the latest issue of the MIT Technology Review. Quote, "You promised me Mars colonies. Instead, I got Facebook and why we've stopped solving big problems." Wow. Well, there is a wake-up call, and from MIT, no less. The writers say that somehow in the last 50 years, entrepreneurs, technologists, investors, even the government, pretty much everyone, has lost the zeal necessary to solve the really big challenges. Global warming, the energy crisis, cancer, you name it. Instead, they say tech has gone down the road of quick money and small pursuits. I mean, the Uber private driver app is nice. It might get you an affordable ride to Logan Airport, but it's not exactly a world-changing technology. It is not exactly Mars. We'll talk to one of the MIT Tech Review authors more about this idea in just a moment. But first, hundreds of the Boston entrepreneurs who are working on a variety of challenges, both large and small, they're all at Heinz Convention Center today for what's known as the Unconference. WBUR's Kurt Nickisch is there right now as well. Hi there, Kurt.
Hi, Meghna. Glad to be with you.
It's great to have you. So what is the Unconference?
Well, it is an unconference because it's unlike what you think of as a conference, which is where, you know, sessions are planned months ahead of time and speakers are sort of officially registered and so on. This is one where this morning 1,000 people showed up with no sessions made up yet. And essentially everybody gets in a big room and gets up and says, I want to do a session on cloud-based software as a service. And if somebody else in the room also wanted to do that same thing or wanted to just sit in on that, then they listen and they jump in on it. And it's a little rocky. It's a little democratic. Sometimes the sessions aren't totally well-run, but they're really, really timely. And so some of the ones today that I just came out of one called Founder Therapy, another one called Five Things Venture Capitalists Are Thinking But Are Not Say, but won't say when you're pitching to them. And another one on, and this is an example of the timeliness, another one on how entrepreneurship can help us fix elections.
Mm.
That's just not something that's sort of planned out at normal conferences. So it's a little rocky, but really, really fun.
Interesting. So you've been to the Unconference before. Based on what you're seeing there today and this year in terms of, it seems like it's a good reflection of where entrepreneurs' minds are. Do you see there's a shift in the direction of thinking for Boston tech entrepreneurs?
Yeah, this year for the first time I've heard there are a lot of sessions and a lot of people who are working on ed tech, right? So how technology can make education work better. And there's even news this morning that there's going to be a new accelerator in Boston focused just on educational technology companies. So that's really sort of the biggest, newest trend.
Now, Kurt, you mentioned that there was this sort of spontaneous breakout session about how tech can or entrepreneurs can help fix elections. Did you see any other sort of big thinking, like let's take on these world problems kind of groups gelling together?
You know, I think it's funny. I mean, there are new things like educational technology and big data, and it's certainly much bigger. Like, there's a lot more money coming in. There's definitely many more startups. There are 1,000 people here this year. It was like 600 people last year, I think. But, you know, there is, I've talked to entrepreneurs who are doing calendar apps for busy moms, and, you know, you can say that's not important. You can also say that's really important for those busy moms. But if you just think about educational technology, you could argue that helping people get better higher education, make it more accessible, make it less costly, is more important than going to Mars. Mm-hmm. So definitely a lot of like basic consumer-facing fun stuff, but also stuff that you could argue is pretty valuable too.
WBUR's Kurt Nickisch reporting to us live from the Unconference at Heinz Convention Center. Thanks so much, Kurt.
You got it.
So that's what's happening on the ground with Boston tech entrepreneurs today. You know, you heard about calendar apps for moms. You also heard about possibly coming up with new technologies to help fix elections. But is this the kind of big thinking that technology was once known for, say, in the middle of the last century? Well, my guest today says maybe not. Brian Bergstein is deputy editor of the MIT Tech Review. He is one of the voices behind the new Tech Review issue that, again, has that very eye-catching headline, "You promised me Mars colonies, instead I got Facebook." So, Brian Bergstein, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So, tell me, why do you think... Well, first of all, give me the reasons why you think that technology and entrepreneurs and developers aren't pursuing these big... world-challenging projects anymore.
Sure. So a lot of the things that Kurt saw at this unconference and a lot of the things that happen in tech hubs all over are really interesting and are really important. The ed tech thing he mentioned is great. And, you know, anything that makes someone's life easier or better, whether it's a calendar app, we shouldn't denigrate that. That's great stuff.
But you see it as small stuff. You're not putting it in the same category as, you know, finding a cure for cancer.
Well, no. But, I mean, I think what we're trying to say in this issue and to raise awareness of is the idea that there will be these kinds of nice-to-have things and good-to-have things, but as a society, it seems like we've stopped making enough progress on the really monumental civilization-scale improvements that seem to come with more regularity in the 20th century. So... if you take a step back to the 60s, at that time, look at everything that we had done in the previous decades. You know, we had invented the airplane, the assembly line. We had we were on our way to eradicating polio. Smallpox would be wiped out. We'd put people on the moon, right? And this sort of faith that progress in technology would continue, that's very important, not only because it actually allows us to solve big problems, because it's important also to think that life will keep getting better. And you could be forgiven for thinking that maybe we've stalled in that rate of progress. The moon landing, you know, arguably that didn't solve a problem, but we haven't gone any further in space than that. And that's sort of representative of kind of where we stand in our tech development.
So interestingly, in the issue, I've got it here in front of me, you point out that some of the loudest voices on this front are some, well, essentially billionaire entrepreneurs, the so-called PayPal mafia, Peter Thiel and his buddies, who are sort of leading the charge of complaint from Silicon Valley, saying this is what we need to be investing in, these big-minded, you know, change-the-world kind of problems.
Right, and that's great. I think they're identifying... We're certainly not the first to identify this problem, that, wait a minute, what are we really achieving with these sort of... these apps or these one-offs or, you know... what we would say and what we think, you know, among myself and the other editors of the magazine is Silicon Valley alone can't fix the problem. Venture capitalists alone can't fix the problem. VCs have never invested, generally speaking, in technologies that have exceedingly long-term payout or are so risky. They may not even have an actual economic benefit.
Yeah, they want to exit in, what, 3 to 5 years at...
Or even 8 to 10.
But at 2 to 300%, right?
Well, I think...
Maybe,
you know,
I'm being overly ambitious.
No, so. What they want to do is they want to invest in, you know, 20 things, hoping that 3 or 4 pay off, right? Huge. But... we're talking about, we face problems now in the world that have greater than an 8 to 10 year time frame. So the energy problem is the greatest example, right? There is, even if VCs were more willing to fund early stage energy companies, there are so many reasons that we have not come close to cracking the energy problem, that we're not really making much headway at all on changing our energy mix to deal with the climate problem.
Well, let me jump in there because, you know, and I'll speak a little bit for a second again about Peter Thiel and sort of the interesting conundrum that his advocacy for what you're talking about presents. Because on the one hand, I mean, he is a very rich entrepreneur, very rich venture capitalist also, who made his money through PayPal. But while he's saying we should pursue these huge, you know, change the world type of ideas, he was also an initial investor in Facebook, let's put it that way. But he is very publicly, he's spoken very publicly about his disdain for government. I mean, he's a self-branded libertarian. And a lot of people would say, well, the thing that's missing right now in terms of directing time, effort, money, energy, and people towards solving these big problems is governmental leadership that can do it without having to be guaranteed, you know, a certain rate of return in a certain time span.
Right. I mean, I think the way to think about it is that, again, nothing wrong with Facebook. You can actually argue it's had this fabulous positive effect on the world and Twitter as well, you know, making the world more connected. But, right, VCs alone, left to their own devices, aren't going to suddenly bring about, if they were just to sort of invest with more wisdom or more passion for changing the world, that's not enough to get to probably solve some of the big problems. So in energy, if we keep coming back, that's the problem of our time, right? Even if you had, we're all for this idea of letting, you know, a thousand flowers bloom, let all these startups pursue funding and see what they can do. But the role for government is to step in when there's this market failure. And there is definitely going to be a market failure in energy because it's very, very expensive to scale up a technology. You can find something that works in the lab in a really promising degree and find that it either doesn't scale up or you need to spend so much money to build a demonstration plant or something like that, that you never even get the chance to see how well it scales up.
But don't you think some people would say, well, there have been times that the government has tried to sort of influence the market regarding energy at the state level here with Evergreen Solar, of course, Solyndra at the national level, and they haven't done a very good job of it.
No, because that's actually the wrong approach. So I think this idea of investing kind of piecemeal in companies here and there is a bad strategy. It's probably a waste of resources, or at least it's not the best way to allocate resources. One of the problems of the energy investment that was made in the stimulus plan is that was partly in 2009. It was partly sold as a jobs program. When we're talking about problems that are going to, you know, take years to solve and take years to plug away at, and what the government should have done in that sense is rather than picking individual companies, we need probably more instances where the government says, okay, we can support the construction of a pilot facility where multiple companies can test their technologies. So you see this sometimes in the chip industry where a coalition of academia, government, and companies have worked together to fund there's actually a really good chip development center in Albany, New York, where this sort of joint public-private coalition mm-hmm. has funded a center where multiple companies can test new chip designs. Imagine if each company had to build their own factory
right.
to test their chip design. Now they can go to the central place. So the idea is that government should maybe be more in building the infrastructure that multiple companies can benefit from.
So that's one. I take your point on that, but I'm also trying to put myself in sort of an entrepreneur's shoes, because I have, you know, on this show, we've spoken with a lot of people who say that one of the things that they like about not having, you know, big government projects or government goals is that essentially it's more freedom. It gives them greater creativity, greater flexibility, a much more sort of high turnover in terms of trying different, new and different ideas. Sort of Kurt earlier used the word, it's a little more democratic and distributive, even, rather than having sort of a long-term goal set by Washington. I mean, isn't that's the age that we're in now, and how can we say in the moment today that what's going on at the ground level regarding entrepreneurs may not someday lead to great advancements in energy, in biotech, in medicine, or climate change?
It may, but could we afford to take the chance that it doesn't, right? So, look, we're seeing great progress in cancer research and the idea of cancer genomics, where we know so much more than we did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, certainly more than we did 40 years ago when we declared war on cancer and found that it didn't really go anywhere. So definitely history shows us that you can't just declare war on some idea and, you know, everything magically happens. But I would say that the alternative is that if we don't sort of recognize that, you know what, at our present course, we don't look like we're going to get there. We're not going to solve the climate problem, the energy problem. we don't want to become a planned, staid, you know, bureaucracy. We don't want to have a central planned economy like China. But there are ways where if we set a goal, we can rally and mobilize more efforts, you know.
We've got just a couple seconds to go, about 40 seconds. I mean, you are one of the editors at the MIT Technology Review. You're there at one of the centers of development and technological advancement at MIT. I mean, you know, briefly, what's your prescription for, you know, one or two things that you think, you know, we as a society should be doing to move towards solving these big problems?
Well, I mean, I think what's really exciting is that MIT and other places, people are really committed. There is a zeal, actually, to solving the world's biggest problems. MIT commits its researchers to solving, to changing the world. What we need to do is actually just recognize that there are times in which the incentives are going to swing in the other direction, and there'll be a lot of money, capital, time spent on solving little things. And unless we stand up and admit, you know, we have a problem, we're not putting enough resources towards really big problems, we're not going to get there.
Brian Bergstein is deputy editor of the MIT Tech Review. Their latest issue has the headline, "You Promised Me Mars Colonies, Instead I Got Facebook." Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can always let us know what you think about this topic or any topic you hear on the show at radioboston.org. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a wonderful weekend. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.